Radio influence. The future is now.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com. You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
All right, and welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. The con man is also here, keeping us on track. Hey, if you do want to get in touch with us, please do so. Crushperformance.com is the website. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can also become a member of our Facebook group called The Talent Grid, where we're just connecting people with the most recent and cutting-edge information and science on sport performance and athlete development. Today, a very important conversation as we begin a two-part series on drugs in sport. It was spurred on by the banning of the entire Russian Athletic Federation in November. It's one of the, I think, greatest events in the fight against drugs in sports since the Lance Armstrong crackdown. And, of course, after that was a series of events and the Sean Horkoff suspension in the National Hockey League. And then, of course, just this week, MLB's first lifetime ban as a Mets pitcher went down on the eve of pitchers and catchers reporting. So there's lots going on. The conversation continues despite all of the work being done behind the scenes. So where are we at, I guess, is the question, in the fight against drugs in sport? Today on the show, we will talk with Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency, David Hallman, get his perspective on where we're at in the war on drugs. And we're going to ask him about the embarrassment that is the Russian Athletic Federation. And he is entering his final months at the helm of the world's doping watchdog. We'll see what he thinks about his perspective looking back on his time with WADA and what the future looks like for the war on drugs and fair play. In the news, of course, recently, actually, you know, I should even say recently, the last few years, there's been a growing conversation behind the scenes around the issue of drugs in sports. And that is the conversation of, should we be considering legalization of certain banned substances? The majority of the talk revolves around HGH. And Mark Cuban, of course, who is quite a notable personality in the sporting world, is actually leading the charge. As far back as 2012, he's been pushing the issue, and his foundation is now funding a two-year, $800,000 exploratory study at the University of Michigan to look at the viability of getting HGH into the mix of professional sport. The conversation here really revolves around, I think, more than anything, player health and helping them cope with the grueling schedule that is professional sports. The ultimate question is, are we asking maybe too much of these athletes? We know that sport in general isn't necessarily about competitiveness and top performance. It's about survival at that level. It is an entertainment business. And if you look at the competitive schedule of every single sport, it is almost too much for any of the athletes to bear. And that's what we're seeing when we look at the increase in injuries and we look at the time missed and the amount of money that teams and organizations are having to spend now on lost time due to injuries. One of the biggest priorities in professional sport, and let me just stand corrected there, in sport in general, if we look at minor sport and what's happening, you know, with specialization and the increased volume and intensity of sport at the younger levels, the number one priority across the board is injury and injury prevention. And that has stemmed on the conversation, should we consider legalizing drugs in sport? It is a hot topic question, but maybe a viable one. Later in the show today, we'll be talking with Brian Sluggett, sociology researcher, to look at the implications of selectively legalizing some certain PEDs in professional sport. It's a slippery slope, in my opinion, a very slippery slope. And we'll want to get your opinions as well. So let's get to it. We're very happy to be joined by the Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency, David Hallman. Mr. Hallman, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a great honor to speak with you as you are now passing the torch, stepping down from WADA after an amazing time. And I first off wanted to congratulate you for all your time with WADA and all the things you've accomplished at the helm of one of sport's greatest organizations.
Well, thanks for that, Jeff. It's not really a personal achievement. It's one that has really been accomplished with a very special team and a group of governors that have given us a good deal of support as an independent organization.
If we look back on your time with WADA, Mr. Hallman, are there some things that really come to mind with you in terms of maybe great moments, great successes, breakthroughs, or even challenges for that matter?
Well, look, I think every day is a challenge, and I would probably want to tell you that every day that I've spent in this office has been a challenging one, because there are things that come at you from out of the blue. You are not in control of what goes on in the world. And on a daily basis, when I wake up, I learn the news that has already occurred in some other part of the world because we're a bit behind it. So if I go back over the 13 years I've been here, there have been a number of milestones where I think WADA as an organisation has been very successful. And they include, of course, right at the outset, writing the code and having that accepted by the world of sport and the world of governments. That was a huge initial step, because I think as an international body, we are unique in saying we are 50% government and 50% private enterprise, in other words, sport. But better than that, we've got a lot of rules that apply in every country and in every sport. No other organisation can claim that. So not only did we do that and have unanimous support for it, we've rejigged it a couple of times. We've had two reviews and revised the rules according to current practice and current legal issues and so on. So those achievements really are those that stand out in my mind, because we were the ones that had to manage the process to get to the revisions and to get to the position we're in now.
I look back at when the World Anti-Doping Agency did not exist, and I honestly cannot imagine the mountain that this looked like, or must have looked like, at the onset. We're talking with Mr. David Howman, Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency, because that must have appeared to be quite some mountain, and you guys overcame it. There's some great things that have happened over the years because of this first major initiative to clean up sport. And I just maybe want to touch on a couple of them. You know, a couple of things that really challenged and really got the press, unfortunately, always seems to be negative. And that's just sort of the downside. But on the other side of those negative events, something really positive happened. You know, we had the whole cycling industry and the fiasco there with teams. And, of course, Lance Armstrong. And maybe we could start right there in terms of challenges and what that's done for sport moving forward since that event.
Well, I think you're right in relation to Lance Armstrong. I think that was a very strong statement for clean athletes, made not necessarily by WADA. This was an investigation conducted by USADA, and one where they delivered a decision which was very well reasoned, sufficiently contained facts that it wasn't challenged. And the challenges that did occur were those in the courts of Texas, and the Texas justice said that USADA had the right to do what they were doing and so on. So that was a significant, decision. It followed from a number of previous decisions in cycling, including one involving Floyd Landis and one involving Tyler Hamilton, where individuals had been found positive through the normal means, in other words, through the collection of blood and urine. So you had a world of cycling which had been in turmoil for some years, and I guess everybody felt that they were watching a tour where most of the peloton were doped, to a situation where now I would think that cycling is in a position where they say, no, we've cleaned up a lot. So I think as one sport, that's certainly been a step in the right direction.
Well, and one thing I really do respect about the International Cycling Union is whenever they had an issue, even if it was some of their biggest stars, they were not afraid to go to the front pages of the newspaper and say, here's where we're at. And I think that was pretty powerful, and I think something the fans really appreciated.
Well, I think that's the case now, and I think I think the support that we now get from the International Cycling Union is of that ilk. We certainly had to argue a number of cases ourselves on their behalf. We argued some of them with them as dual partners in the cases and so on. So I think as a sport, that has benefited from the fight against doping, for sure.
We're talking with David Howman, the Director General for the World Anti-Doping Agency. Well, let's talk about one of the great initiatives. I think that, you know, personally, I've been involved in professional sport, being the strength and conditioning coach for the Toronto Blue Jays and now consulting globally for Major League Baseball. One of the things that I was sort of really proud of, Mr. Howman, was the blood passport system. I'm going, wow, this could really be a massive tool in the war on drugs in sport.
Look, and it is a tool, and it is an advance to what we had before, right, in the analysis of blood and urine. And what it does is give not only the opportunity to see if athletes are doping, but also the opportunity to athletes to show that they're not doping. And you talked earlier about the negative side of things. Well, here's a positive way that athletes can show the population of the world that follows sport that they're clean athletes, because their profile is robust and can stand the scrutiny that it's required. So that's a significant advance. I think the other thing, Jeff, and you just reminded me when you mentioned your liaison with baseball. Baseball have done a huge amount in changing the way in which they've addressed the problem of doping in that sport. And we all know the steroid era and those who were scoffing back stuff without fear of being caught, and the big change that the Mitchell inquiry led to, and the leadership of Rob Manfred and so on, to a situation now where baseball probably got one of the best testing programs of any team sport in the world. And I think that's a significant advance in a sport which did suffer.
It certainly is. And, you know, I was there, Mr. Howman, you know, sort of in the dark days when things were just all over the press and baseball was taking punch after punch, and rightfully so, because it was a dark and dirty place to be. But the advances that have been made are really, truly something to be proud of. And I think it sends a message across the board. And that has a lot to do with the initiatives and the partnerships with WADA and the regulations that the organization is set up to liaison and help the pro organizations clean it up. I mean, when I was there, I remember when some of these athletes were tested and deemed positive, and, you know, some of the veteran players, even some of the young players, you know, showing their anger that they have to deal with cheaters in their sports. So I think there's a lot of good things that do come out of it.
And I agree with that, and I agree with your comments about the strength of the players, because I think when the players do realize that they've got a problem that they need to deal with, they're the right people to deal with it. And if you get an outcry from a players' union which says, look, we don't want to be lumped in this category of cheating athletes, we would prefer to be in the clean athlete category, then you can get changed quite quickly. And that's what's occurred with the collective bargaining agreement in the sport of baseball.
We're talking with David Howman, the Director General for the World Anti-Doping Agency. Well, recently, a very major statement by the International Doping Union, I guess, or organizations, the banning of the Russian Athletic Federation in November. Now, this was something that I think if you're inside of the sport, maybe didn't surprise a lot of people, but I think the amplitude of this really took the sporting world off guard, maybe, or by surprise.
It was a report that we commissioned.
Right.
We got an independent group to investigate the allegations that had come forward from a television program in Germany, and we felt that they were so significant they had to be looked at in the strongest way. We had the power given to us from the 1st of January last year to do these things, and this was the first one we had conducted. And what it came back with was sufficient information to show that there was bribery and corruption going on within Russian athletics. And we had to ask the International Athletics Federation to suspend that body until they cleaned up properly. Now, that cleanup process is taking place now. There's an independent group from the international athletics people looking at it. They will report. At the same time, the National Anti-Doping Agency in Russia has been declared non-compliant, and we're looking at how that can be remedied. So there's a lot that went on in Russia and internationally that was, I would have to say, shocking, Jeff. It was really, really shocking.
I agree, and I was shocked. I just thought the gall after everything that's happened in sport and inside of that sport in particular, and all the moves that have been made to advance it forward, the gall, I thought, of a federation. You know, if the report is even remotely close to what they're saying, I just, it's flabbergasting to me, Mr. Hellman.
Well, I think it's not just close, it's actual. And there have been four people, including the former president of the International Athletics Federation, his chief counsel, and the head of the doping unit in the IAAF, all arrested in France and charged with corruption.
Right.
There are warrants out for a couple of people in Russia who were part of it. And just so that your listeners know, it was all about money being paid by athletes to the top people in the administration to avoid their cases receiving sanctions. And so there are a number of athletes, for example, from Russia who competed in London when they ought not to have competed because they should have been sanctioned for doping offences. So that was just outrageous. And I think when you look at that and you look at the people that competed against these athletes being denied of their day in the sun or they're denied their glory, it is, as I said before, very shocking.
It is shocking and sad. We're talking with Mr. David Howman, the Director General of WADA, who will be stepping down after 13 years at the helm. Future challenges, Mr. Howman. I mean, again, as you say, every day you step into that office, there's a new challenge. If you were to look forward, maybe 3, 4, 5 years, what do you think you would like it to look like? Is there anything happening now that you say, boy, this has got to happen? Is there anything out there that you think is happening right now that's really going to make a difference?
Well, I think the issues out there are not just issues of doping. The issues have expanded to include bribery and corruption in doping, just as I've outlined, but also in other parts of sport. There are bad stories about what's gone on in FIFA, the World Soccer Body. There are issues I'm just watching at the moment in relation to match fixing and tennis. There is a lot of allegations out there that sport is not the pure game that we would all want it to be. And those challenges are going beyond doping, and I think require an international watchdog to look at it. So my hope, and I've been saying this for a number of years, Jeff, is that there is an appropriate monitor of world sport to ensure that these sorts of things either don't happen, or if they do happen, are addressed quickly. And that will help the public see that sport is really the entertainment and the sport and the purity of competition that they want.
Mr. Howman, would that organization be a sort of a parallel to WADA, maybe in terms of ethics in sport?
Yeah, I think it should be. I think WADA could be one leg of it, you know, one arm of it. It might have 4 or 5 arms, but that's the sort of thing that needs to be established so that there is an independent, transparent approach to things that leads the confidence of the public.
Oh, gosh, I like it. I like it a lot, especially when we see, of course, what's going on in FIFA and the corruption that's there. You know, some of the accusations that are being made when it comes to IOC and placement of the Olympics and all the things that go on behind there. I mean, there's so much speculation in gray areas. The people who, you know, love sport or really enjoy sport can't help but have negative impressions when we hear all this gray, I guess.
And look, I'm an avowed cynic myself, but I don't want to lose my love of sport,
right,
nor my love of competition. It's just got to be fair, and we have to respect that. And if we can't show people that you can respect it, then we're failing in our job here at WADA. But I think those of us who want to ensure the integrity of sport throughout, we've got a few more challenges to address.
Well, I'm all on board. If you need help, let me know, because I like the sounds of this all.
I'll give you a call, Jeff.
Excellent. Good. One more thing for you, Mr. Howman. There's been a push by some fairly notable people in sport. Mark Cuban, over the last few years, has been talking about the use of HGH in sport and potentially legalizing some of the current banned substances with the intent of helping athletes avoid injury and come back from injury quicker. And I wanted to get your comments on this because in my mind right off, you know, just thinking about it, you know, sort of at face value, it seems to be a very, very slippery slope.
Yeah, it is. But there are two parts of my answer. First of all, I don't think anybody should be taking stuff to avoid injury. I just don't think that is right nor correct medical treatment. It's a medical issue of people having painkillers before they play, and I don't think that avoids injury. It avoids pain, but might lead to injury, for example. The other aspect of it, though, recovery after sporting events, if you need medical treatment which involves a banned substance and there's no other way of treating you, you can get what we call a therapeutic use exemption to take that substance. So there is the ability to do that if there is that medical need. If you're doing it just because you want the player to be back on the paddock, you know, in 2 days rather than 2 weeks, then you're seeking a performance enhancing through the use of banned substances. Now, the downside to that is that the use of a lot of these things can lead to health problems later in life. And I think the only people who really know how much that happens are those who have taken drugs illegally and suffered later. We don't hear much about those sports athletes because once they're off the center stage, they're no longer performing on a weekly basis. They get forgotten. But if you do searches and you look at players 10 years on and players who have taken steroids, many of them are in bad health. And people out there, if they were to say, that's my son or that's my grandson or my granddaughter, would not want that to happen.
Well, what I would like to see, and I agree, Mr. Hellman, that is, you're 100%. We're on. I think that's the way to go. And that's why this conversation really does get me nervous. Just having this conversation or hearing it out there gets me incredibly nervous, because what I would like to see is just everybody taking advantage of what we have. I mean, proper nutrition is all powerful, and I really don't think we've mastered that or using it. And those who do are really getting an advantage. You know, proper training protocols and matching the competition volumes and rest and recovery is a really untapped area of potential. So we have all these great things that we can do that I just don't think we're doing. We're looking for shortcuts, and that's not always the best answer.
No, it's not ever the best answer, I don't think.
Right.
Jeff, I think shortcutting in all parts of our society leads to cheating, whether that's plagiarism in journalism or whether it's cheating in exams and so on. And I don't think when you confront anybody, they want to say, yes, I agree with that. Nobody really does. What they do is to say, well, let's have a drug all-on games, for example, and say, okay, if you want to do that, you're taking us back to the days of the Christians and the lions. You're really looking at something that you've got no control over, and it's it just doesn't fit with some of us who have stronger values. And so there's that component of it that you have to take into account.
Yeah, I'm going to flat out say it right here and there. It's insanity. That talk is insanity. I'll say it for sure, because I agree. Oh, Mr. Hellman. Well, listen, I really appreciate your time today. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I want to thank you once again for all your time at WADA. It's been a real honor talking with you over the years, and we'll look forward to, of course, following you and watching WADA as a new headmaster takes control.
I'm sure they'll do well, Jeff.
Great. Thank you. There you go. No shortcuts from the Director General of WADA. But let's get down to it. When we come back, let's ask the question, are we asking too much of our athletes? The grind and the pressure of professional sports, should we consider legalizing some of those PEDs when we look at it from a player health and wellness? That and more on Crush right after this.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Kershaw. The con man is here as well as we talk drugs in sports. And I just got off a fantastic conversation with the Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency, David Hellman, stepping down this year, passing the torch, so to speak. He has a long legacy, starting that organization from scratch and now looking at where it was today. A couple comments I thought that were really interesting coming out of that conversation was, of course, the look at the Russian Athletic Federation getting banned from international sport for some of the things that they found in a investigation that was done over the course of a 6-month period that was headed up by Dick Pound, former chairman of WADA. And there will be probably some Olympic medals returned to the IOC based on that investigation. And we're potentially looking at Russia missing the next Olympics, which would be something else. Now, it goes right up to the highest levels of the Russian government. The heat is on. They're embarrassed, and they're trying to fix the problems. But where do these problems come from? We got to try to understand here why athletes go to the dark side. And, you know, if you really look at it, it kind of makes sense. We all think we know the answers, but I don't think we truly know until we're sitting in the shoes of the athletes who are making those decisions. We know that some of it is money orientated. There's no question about it. Losing their careers, the big money that's available in professional sports, there's no doubt about it. Two is, you know, dealing with the daily grind of professional sports. If we truly look at the competitive schedules in every single professional sport, you'll find that it has nothing to do with top performance and seeing these athletes perform at their best. If it were, I think most of the competitive schedules would be cut in half, because these guys need way more rest, especially when you look at the time changes or the time zone changes that they're going through. So then the question starts coming up, and it's something that's gaining some speed out there. Should we consider legalizing some of the currently banned performance-enhancing drugs, and it mostly revolves around HGH. We're joined now by Brian Sluggett, sociology researcher at the U of A. Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Your thesis was titled Creating the Pure Athlete, Discourses on Steroid Use and Prohibition in Sport. Well, it's an interesting conversation that we are about to have here as we look at what's happened over in Russia in November, the banning of an entire athletic federation, and chances are they're going to miss the Olympics in Brazil. And it's raised a lot of questions. And we're seeing now, you know, a real strong push from WADA, of course, and that's a shot across the bow to everybody who's, you know, I guess, thinking of going to the dark side in sport. But on the other side, we're also seeing an interesting conversation come out. Should some of these PEDs that have classically been banned maybe be legalized to the benefit of the athlete? And I guess this is where our conversation comes in. So again, thanks for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's get back to the basis of your thesis. Now, this was a few years ago, of course, but let's go back to your mindset when you did the thesis and kind of what you're trying to get at when you put this forward to all your peers.
Yeah, well, when I first started studying doping in sport, I was thinking this is just really wrong, and I wanted to try and come up with ways of preventing doping in sport because I thought it was unfair. And then as I studied the topic more and more, I started realizing that doping itself is actually not really inconsistent with what sport does or the purpose of sport. So as it becomes more professionalized in the last 50 years and science and technology becomes more inundated into the daily lives of athletes, the idea that we can kind of separate out certain substances that are morally wrong or medically wrong is kind of becomes a little bit difficult, I think. And the question is, you know, is the current system we have actually safe for athletes? So I started turning to arguments that we had seen in sort of other drug wars, sort of the recreational war on drugs, and realized that maybe a harm reduction approach might be best for athletes. Because if we really care here about athlete health, the best approach when we're dealing with drugs is a harm reduction one, one where it's actually regulated. Because the current system is actually just exists within an underground market, and we actually really don't know what's going on, what athletes are using, how safe the procedures are. It's really kind of an unknown world for the last 50 years. We're just kind of guessing and speculating. So if we actually regulated drug use through like a harm reduction approach, we actually have a better handle on what's going on than we currently do.
Yeah, and it's not a bad conversation to have. It certainly is a cat and mouse game, as you know, the advances in the testing, take the blood passport tool, for example, that was introduced a few years ago and taken on by the International Cycling Union. It's a pretty powerful tool in the fight against drugs to find out who's using and who's not. But on the other side, there's so many advances in terms of the designer drugs and microdosing and all the different strategies that athletes can now apply that, you know, the testing world just can't keep up with. So we've got a real cat and mouse game going on here.
We really do. And the baseline testing is really interesting. That passport is a new drug testing technique because it doesn't attempt to identify illegal substances. What it does is try and take a baseline snapshot of someone's natural biological sort of printout data and then tries to look for fluctuations in that. So it's an attempt to try and identify an unnatural substance in your body. But the problem is, how do you draw that line when, say, someone actually improves their performance through legal means? It becomes difficult for the drug testers to sometimes prove that a doping violation had actually occurred. And they really can't keep up with drug testing. It costs a lot of money, and the athletes and the people who are creating these substances seem to always be one step ahead. And so we're stuck in a game where we don't really have the tools to catch dopers, but yet we're not quite ready to move to a more regulated system where we'd actually be monitoring in a more serious way what's going on, because we're concerned with the kind of ethical violations.
We're talking with Brian Sluggett, researcher at the University of Alberta. Well, you're not alone in your mindset here. We know that Mark Cuban has been, since 2012, pushing really hard, at least raising interest in the idea of potentially legalizing HGH for the idea of injury prevention and rehabilitation from injuries. Now, WADA does have a medical exemption program where athletes can use a typically banned substance if it's under doctor's orders for the health of the athlete. And, of course, it has to go through the protocol. So that is in place. But at the same time, there's this push going on saying, hey, look, does it make sense? And you said something very interesting earlier. Is it possible that the environment we've created for these athletes in terms of testing and regulating has made the environment even more dangerous, as you mentioned, going to the dark side in the black market?
Yeah, and it's an interesting point that Cuban raises. I mean, we actually need to study this. I think he's raising a fascinating kind of set of questions here, and that's, we assume doping substances are always extremely dangerous and are always going to be unhealthy for the athlete. But as, you know, these new pharmaceutical drugs hit the market and techniques like HGH hit the market, there's a question of if those drugs are actually not super unsafe and they boost performance and they help keep athletes on the field, is that actually really inconsistent with sport? Is it better to continue to ban these techniques because we decided a long time ago, kind of arbitrarily, that that's a wrong technique, maybe 40, 50 years ago?
I guess in a perfect world, if we look at it, I mean, in the true nature of sport and fairness, you'd like everybody just to try to get to a point where they're competing at the highest level possible clean. I mean, that's the idea of it all. I mean, that's sort of the utopia dream where everybody's, you know, just competing and doing their best. And maybe it's a sign of commitment. Maybe it's a sign of dedication. Everybody who's willing to go that extra distance in terms of getting their sleep and eating right and training properly and managing their time and rest and recovery, they're going to have a distinct advantage, because at the world-class levels and the professional levels, those are really deal breakers when it comes to, you know, gaps between talent levels, because everybody's talented up there. But at the same time, again, you raise an interesting point in your thesis, and I think in some of the conversations that you've had, is that, you know, what we're asking these athletes to do is just very incredibly unrealistic. And I think that's driven more by the financial side than it is the sport performance. I mean, it's turned into a massive entertainment industry that really isn't thinking about the performance side, especially when it comes to the professional main sports, anyway, in North America.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just look at the size and strength of NHL players or football players. There's certainly nothing natural about how quickly they move, but it's entertaining. And we would have to be willing to, say, draw a real line in performance abilities in those sports and say, we're willing to take a decline in performance, a decline in entertainment value, what we've become accustomed to really put in what you would call clean athletics, because clean athletics, in my opinion, ends once sport is no longer amateur. Once it becomes professional and you have science and technology targeting advancements at a very kind of advanced level, and then you also have kind of the corporate need to kind of make these entertaining and make it fun for the fans, well, that's a kind of a witch's brew there. I don't think athletes are really able to navigate this in an ethical way easily, especially when they have financial obligations to keep going, to maximize their kind of ability to make money in their early 20s. I mean, that's basically it. If they're injured, then they might be cut from the team and no longer be able to play. And so if they, you know, use something like HGH to get back out there, is that really inconsistent with what we're asking them to do? We're asking them to play through pain and push through barriers and push through what we thought were natural human limits of what we thought was capable. And they're pushing through these barriers, and we're turning around and getting angry at them when a few of them kind of cross a boundary that I don't know is possible to keep anymore.
We're talking with Brian Sluggett, researcher at the University of Alberta. Well, Brian, I was the strength coach with the Toronto Blue Jays in the late 90s and early 2000s when the big crackdown came in terms of drug use in that sport. And there were two things that really went on there. One were the accusations that, hey, everybody's turning a blind eye and everybody in the league is using, which wasn't the case at all. And then the other line was that once these tests started coming out, there was a strong contingent of players who morally or ethically just wouldn't, you know, go to the dark side and use to enhance their performance. But this group stood up quite loudly and said, hey, look, these guys who are using, they're causing me to think about going to the dark side when that's something they would never do. And I thought that was a really interesting and powerful statement made by guys who wanted to see the sport played the right way in their mind.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because we are stuck. I think athletes are stuck in this contradiction. I don't have an easy answer for that. I think the nature of sport seems to be currently to keep pushing through those boundaries and keep pushing to the absolute limit of your capacities. And it's difficult to stop time. It's difficult to draw a line and say, I think this is the limits of our human capacity. Because in baseball, you're talking about jobs there. They're competing for spots. They're competing for big salaries.
Amen.
But it's also understandable, and it is understandable. And it's why my you know, I think we are going to continue to struggle with this from an ethical standpoint, because some athletes are going to say, I don't want to dope, or I don't want to push my body through those boundaries. Isn't there something, and there's something appealing to that. That's kind of that amateur approach of, like, there's something about the love of sport or the fairness of sport or the purity of sport that we're all drawn to. But yet the current context kind of doesn't match that.
Well, we look at other, I guess we look at other, I guess, genres of entertainment, and you mentioned it before, I've heard you talk about it, the entertainers in classical music using beta blockers to calm their nerves, and that is a, I guess, you know, an aid to maximize performance under pressure, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we kind of live in a performance-enhancing society. We just expect athletes to kind of, athletics is special in that we apply different standards to it. That's how I look at it, at least. And, I mean, there's the example of people using beta blockers in classical music. Another one would be, that I think is probably even more of a serious violation than even cheating in athletics, is cheating potentially using neuroenhancers, which are here and they're kind of just keep developing the next 50 years to get into things like med school, law school, to get a job. So, I mean, are we going to start, you know, in society, are we going to start testing people to see if they're using pharmaceutical drugs to increase their neural abilities? I mean, all across society, we have these new capacities to push through performance barriers. Athletics is kind of, so athletics kind of exists within this culture, I would say, and also the science and technological ability to manipulate human ability at these neural levels, chemical levels that we never had before. And so I think that's what's also pushing us to have these ethical conversations, is that we actually have the capacities now scientifically to push through boundaries that we thought were there for forever. And they're not anymore.
Well, it's a bit of a conundrum. We're talking with Brian Sluggett, researcher from the University of Alberta. And, you know, we have on one side, of course, WADA. And then on the other side, we have the business side of sport, which is a billion-dollar business. Major League Baseball will be set to tip over the $10 billion mark. The NFL is already there. And, you know, it's big business. So we have these two sort of opposing forces that are pushing, I guess, the limits of human ability in two different directions. One is trying to say, okay, hey, look, we're there, and we really can't go anywhere else unless we go to the dark side. That would be the testing and doping, anti-doping side. And the other one's saying, okay, look, hey, we need more games, we need more exposure, we need more revenue, and that's pushing the limits of human ability to, I guess, that tipping point. And maybe that might be an area of focus that we need to look at in terms of, you know, protecting our athletes and athlete health, and also in terms of maximizing performance.
Yeah, I agree. I actually think, like, whatever policy we decide on, the first and foremost primary goal should be the health of the athlete, and the athlete should be at the center of all our policies. And if that means, you know, changing the nature of sport a little bit around the edges, I mean, not that this is realistic, I think, within our current climate, but reducing the number of games or having a more active kind of involvement with medical professionals to say, no, you're injured, you can't go out there. So something similar like the concussion policy, but applied more broadly to other kind of injuries. Because right now, athletes really are encouraged to push through injuries often to keep playing, to keep making money, because they've got to get out there for those games, especially if they're like fringe guys, you know, third or fourth liners in the NHL. You don't want to get labeled as someone who's like injury prone. And so you're not going to make the team unless you're like a superstar or something. You're probably not going to have a job anymore if you're considered someone who doesn't push through those injuries. And so what it would take, I think what you're suggesting is actually changing some of the culture of sport to be centered more around a harm reduction type approach, one that centers athlete's health as kind of our primary concern. And that the health of the athlete is not just about whether they're using doping substances or not, but actually like how sport is run.
Agreed. Well, it's an interesting question, and it's an interesting issue inside of the world of sport, and you're right. The number one priority here, of course, would be the health of the athlete, and of course, the level of performance that we can achieve inside of a workable environment. Brian Sluggett, thank you for your time today. Much appreciated, and a very interesting perspective.
Thank you for having me, and that was enjoyable.
There you go, Brian Sluggett. Hey, when we come back, what pushes athletes to the dark side? We look at the moral and ethical battle to use or not to use next on Crush Performance. Stick around.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We have something for everyone. National sports radio talents like the Fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like Wrestling Soup and the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. News and current event shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger. We've got you covered. You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at CrushPerformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to the show. Listen, a very important topic today as we look at drugs in sports. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, do get to us, crushperformance.com. You can get into our weekly newsletter as we hook you up with the world of sport performance to keep you on the cutting edge. And you can also check out all the information that we have on the website as well. Podcasts are there as well as some great articles. So I've got to thank our guest today, the Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency, David Howman, was on. A very interesting discussion there as we look at where we're at in the current battle in drugs and sports. And if you look at the fact that an entire athletic federation has been banned from competition, the Russian Athletic Federation was banned in November for some obscurities that came out of a longitudinal and in-depth investigation about what's going on over there in terms of athletes and doping and athlete performance. And it's alarming, especially in today's day and age when we put so much effort into the push out of, clean sport and drugs in sports. And I also appreciated his comment about Major League Baseball has come from and the fact that they right now probably have the strongest anti-doping program in all of professional sport. This coming off of the announcement last week that they just handed down their first lifetime ban in the new doping model that they have. So great conversation there. And then, of course, Brian Sluggett, sociology researcher at the U of A, talking about his thesis, should we legalize PEDs? Is there an argument to be made there? That conversation is going to continue. I'm with you guys. Thanks for the text today. It is a very slippery slope, one that I'm not prepared to go down. I've been an advocate of clean sport. I don't think athletes know the options well enough in terms of what they can do outside of doping, but I also appreciate why they do it. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, please tune in as we will visit with some athletes who are now retired and went through the moral and ethical dilemma of whether they should use or not to use. One, to extend their careers. Two, to keep their paychecks going. And three, just to stay involved in the world of sport. A great conversation coming up next week on Crush Performance. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Thanks to our guests. Thanks to Con Man. And we'll talk to you next week.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
When you are looking for everything going on in MMA, you want to come to the MMA Insiders Podcast as myself, Jason Floyd, and Sam Kaplan will give you insight you cannot get anywhere else.
I've done it all in this sport, a matchmaker, promoter, even an amateur fighter. If you're looking for the inside scoop, an inside perspective you can't get anywhere else, MMA Insiders Podcast is your destination.
Check out the MMA Insiders Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.